Hey everyone, ready for another deep dive?
Always ready. What are we looking at today?
Well, buckle up, because today we're taking a trip to the heart of copyright law with Campbell Vieacuff Rose Music.
Ah, yes, Campbell. The one that basically wrote the book on parody and fair use. A real landmark case.
No kidding. I mean, this thing went all the way to the Supreme Court.
And for good reason. It settled some serious confusion in the lower courts about how to apply fair use to parodies, especially when those parodies get a little commercial.
Well, that's putting it lightly. This whole thing started with Two Live Crew, a rap group, and their rather, shall we say, unique take on Roy Orbison's classic, Oh Pretty Woman.
Unique is one way to put it. They basically flipped the song on its head, turning a sweet ballad into something a lot more... How shall we say, high energy?
Yeah, not exactly what Roy Orbison had in mind, I'd imagine. But hey, that's parody for you, right?
Exactly. But Vieacuff Rose Music, the folks who own the rights to Oh Pretty Woman, they weren't laughing. They flat out denied Two Live Crew permission to use the song.
But Two Live Crew, being Two Live Crew, they went ahead and released their version anyway. And it wasn't just some underground thing either. They sold like 250,000 copies.
Oh yeah, it blew up big time. And Vieacuff Rose Music, well, they weren't thrilled. To say the least. So off to court they went, claiming copyright infringement.
And thus began the legal roller coaster ride. First one, court signs with Two Live Crew saying, hey, it's fair use, it's a parody, case closed.
Then bam, another court comes in and says, nope, too commercial, fair use, out the window. I mean, talk about a legal head scratcher.
Total chaos, right. So everyone's looking around like, okay, someone needs to settle this. And who better to do that than the Supreme Court?
Right. The Supreme Court steps in. And that decision in Campbell didn't just sort out the Pretty Woman mess. It basically set a precedent that echoed through all of copyright law. And it all boiled down to those four factors of fair use.
Yeah, those four factors always popping up.
Yeah.
You know, purpose and character of the use, nature of the copyrighted work, all that jazz.
Precisely. But Campbell really zeroed in on that first one, purpose and character. They were like, okay, is this new work transformative? Does it do something new with the original? And that's where things get juicy.
Transformative. It's like taking a lump of clay and molding it into something totally different, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Campbell basically said, look, if you're just copying, that's not transformative. But if you're twisting the original, making a statement about it, then you're getting into transformative territory.
So in Two Live Crew's case, they transformed Oh Pretty Woman from a love song into, well, a very different kind of commentary. So that's transformative. But hang on a second. Their song was obviously made to sell, right? Doesn't that automatically disqualify it from being fair use?
That's the thing. That was a major point of confusion in the lower courts. They were stuck on that commercial aspect. But the Supreme Court set them straight. They said, hold up, commercial use doesn't automatically mean it's not fair use. The key, they said, is transformation. The more transformative the work, the less that commercial aspect matters.
So basically they were saying, hey, you can sell your parody and still be in the clear as long as it's transformative enough.
Yeah.
That's a big win for artists.
Huge. It really opened up the field for creative expression.
Right.
Now, let's not forget that second factor, though, the nature of the copyrighted work.
Right. So in this case, we're talking about a song, a creative piece.
Exactly. But here's the catch with parody cases. This second factor doesn't always tell us much. Think about it. Parodies almost always go after creative works, famous ones at that. So this factor in Campbell, not a big help.
Gotcha. It's more about how they used it, not just what they used. Okay, but now we're getting to the really interesting part. That third factor, amount and substantiality of the portion used. Two Live Crew, they didn't just borrow a couple of notes here. They took that instantly recognizable opening riff, the first line of the lyrics, the heart of Oh Pretty Woman, and the Supreme Court. They were cool with it. Why?
Because they understood that for a parody to land, it needs to use those iconic bits of the original. Think of it like a comedian doing an impression. They got to nail those signature quirks to make it recognizable, right? Two Live Crew, they used just enough to conjure up Oh Pretty Woman in your mind, but then they twisted it into something else entirely, something transformative.
So it's not about how much you borrow, it's how you borrow it.
Yeah.
Borrow strategically, make it count.
Yeah.
Okay, last factor up, effect on the market. Cuffrow's Music, I'm guessing they argued that 2 Live Crew's version was cutting into their profits.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where those lower courts really stumbled. They assumed that because 2 Live Crew's song was selling, it automatically meant it was hurting the market for the original.
That seems like a pretty wild assumption, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, someone listening to 2 Live Crew's Pretty Woman probably isn't craving a Roy Orbison ballad at the same time. Two completely different vibes.
You said it. And the Supreme Court, thankfully, shut that assumption down. They made it clear commercial use doesn't automatically mean market harm, especially when it comes to parody. They could be appealing to totally different audiences. And in this case, there was zero evidence that 2 Live Crew's song was actually replacing or hurting the market for the original.
So Campbell v. Cuffrow's Music, it basically gave parodists more creative freedom. It said, hey, even if you're making money off your parody, you can still be protected under fair use as long as it's transformative and doesn't actually hurt the market for the original.
Exactly. It really redefined the playing field. But there's another fascinating wrinkle to this case, Justice Kennedy's concurrence. He added this intriguing little note about parody, drawing a distinction between parody and satire. That's where we'll pick up after a quick break. So yeah, Campbell v. Cuffrow's Music, definitely a win for parodists, no question. Really highlighted the importance of transformative use, but as with most Supreme Court cases, there's always a twist, right?
Oh yeah. You can't forget about Justice Kennedy's concurrence. He was on board with 2 Live Crew's song being fair use. But he also threw in this little warning about parody, like a little footnote saying, hey, let's not get too crazy here. What was he getting at?
Basically, Kennedy was saying, for a parody to be a true parody, it needs to target the original work directly. Like, it's not enough to just grab a famous work and use it to comment on something else completely different. He was worried that if parody got too broad, it could end up weakening copyright protection altogether.
So walk me through that. What did Kennedy see as the line between parody and, say, satire?
Okay, let's stick with 2 Live Crew. They're Pretty Woman. It was taking aim directly at the original song, right? Mocking that romantic, over-the-top view of love. They were poking fun at that specific song, classic parody. But imagine if they'd used the same music, same iconic riff, but changed the lyrics to, I don't know, make fun of Congress or something.
Same music, different target.
Bingo. Now, they wouldn't be going after Oh, Pretty Woman itself. They'd be using it as a tool to talk about something broader. Kennedy would say that's leaning more towards satire. And satire, while protected by the First Amendment, might not have such an easy time claiming fair use under copyright law.
So it's kind of like making fun of a specific movie versus using a movie poster as a prop in a comedy sketch about, like, influencer culture or whatever.
Exactly. Kennedy was saying parody has this special power to really critique and reinterpret existing works, and that's valuable, but there needs to be a limit, you know, to protect the rights of those who own the original.
Makes sense. So it sounds like creators, even if they're going for parody, they need to be careful about how closely tied their work is to the original.
Absolutely. It's not a free pass to just borrow whatever you want and call it a day. Real parody needs that clear link back to the original. You got to show that you're specifically commenting on or critiquing that original piece.
Got it. Okay, so we've got our 4 factors, and we've got Kennedy's take on parody versus satire. What kind of lasting impact did Campbell actually have on copyright law and all these creators out there?
Campbell really cemented this idea that transformative use, that's the heart of fair use, especially with parodies. It basically said, hey, even commercial parodies can be protected as long as they're bringing something new to the table, you know, reinterpreting the source material, speaking to a different audience.
It's like Campbell emboldened parodists, gave them more room to play within copyright law.
Yeah, you could say that. It opened up a lot of possibilities for more creative reimagining works that challenge the original, offer a new perspective, recontextualize things, and that's a win for art, for culture, for free expression.
Totally agree. But like any big legal precedent, there are always those gray areas. What are some of the things Campbell left unresolved? Like, how much transformation is enough? Does the original have to be completely unrecognizable? Can subtle changes in tone or style be enough?
Those are the questions, right? The million-dollar questions. And honestly, there's no easy answer. Campbell lays out a framework, but applying it to real-life situations, that's where things get tricky. Courts are still wrestling with these questions today.
And what about that effect on the market factor? Even if a parody isn't directly competing with the original, couldn't it still have some impact on its value or potential audience? It seems pretty subjective.
Exactly. And that's why you need experts to weigh in, people who understand the market, the creative world, how audiences actually behave. You got to bring in that real world context. It's not just about legal definitions.
That makes sense. And even Justice Kennedy's distinction between parody and satire, which sounds useful in theory, it can get pretty fuzzy in reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you really know the true target of a work, especially when it's a more nuanced, complex kind of commentary?
Ah, now that's where it gets interesting. Because art is subjective, right? What one person sees as a parody of a song, someone else might see as social commentary that just happens to use a familiar tune. Who's to say who's right?
It's like that saying, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But in this case, it's more like fair use is in the eye of the judge.
Exactly. That's what makes these cases so fascinating and complex. They're right at the intersection of law and creativity.
No doubt about it. Okay, let's step out of the courtroom for a minute and talk about the real world. How can Campbell actually guide creators, musicians, writers, anyone working with copyrighted material in their own work? What are the takeaways?
Well, I'd say the biggest takeaway is don't be afraid to experiment, to push the boundaries a little bit, take existing works and reimagine them, find new and exciting ways to use them. Campbell shows us that there's real legal protection for transformative use, even when it's commercially successful, like with a parody.
So basically, channel your inner two live crew, but you know, maybe brush up on the legal side of things too.
Yeah, exactly. But always keep in mind that transformation is key. It's not just about, you know, throwing a funny filter on someone else's work and calling it a day. You need to add something new, you know, make a comment on the original, use it as a jumping off point for your own unique vision.
That makes sense. But how can creators be sure they're staying on the right side of the law? I mean, we've talked about the four factors of fair use, but sometimes it still feels kind of subjective, doesn't it? Like, where do you draw the line?
It definitely can be. That's why it's so important to document your process, you know? Keep really good records of your inspiration, your sketches, your drafts, anything that shows how you transformed the original work into something new. If you ever end up in a legal situation, that kind of evidence is super valuable.
Like leaving a trail of breadcrumbs for your artistic journey.
Yeah.
So if someone questions you, you can say, look, see, here's how I got from A to B.
Exactly. And never, ever hesitate to reach out to a legal expert if you're unsure about anything. Copyright law is complicated, and it's always better to err on the side of caution. A good lawyer can help you figure out the risks and make smart choices about your work.
Always good to have a lawyer in your corner, right? Now, we focus a lot on parody here, but Campbell has implications for other types of transformative uses too, doesn't it? Like, does it apply to sampling, remixing, or even fan art?
Absolutely. Campbell, it set a precedent that goes way beyond just parody. It really broadened our understanding of fair use, recognizing the importance of work that builds on existing cultural material. So whether you're sampling a beat, remixing a song, or even writing fan fiction based on your favorite novel, The Principles of Campbell, they're still relevant. They can guide you.
That's pretty empowering for creators, right? Knowing that they have some legal wiggle room to experiment and innovate. But I imagine copyright holders might have a different perspective on all this. How do we strike that balance between supporting creators and protecting the rights of those who own the original works?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The eternal struggle at the heart of copyright law. It's a constant balancing act, and it's always evolving as technology and culture change. Campbell, it definitely shifted things a bit more towards transformative use, recognizing how important it is to have creative expression that builds on existing work. But it's not a free pass either. Copyright holders, they still have rights. And courts still need to carefully weigh those four factors of fair use on a case-by-case basis.
It's a delicate dance, for sure. But at the end of the day, isn't it all about fostering a culture where creativity can flourish while still respecting the rights of the original creators?
I think you hit the nail on the head. And Campbell, in its own way, helped us move closer to that ideal. It showed that copyright law isn't just about, you know, protecting profits. It's also about promoting progress, innovation, the free flow of ideas.
And sometimes that progress comes in the form of a bold, unexpected parody that makes us look at a familiar song in a whole new light. Who knew?
That's the beauty of creative expression, isn't it? It surprises us, it challenges the norm, it sparks important conversations, and that's something worth celebrating, even if it might ruffle a few feathers along the way.
Beautifully said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into Campbell via Cuffrow's music. We've covered a lot of ground today, from the nitty-gritty of fair use to the big picture impact on creativity and copyright. But really, this is just the start of the conversation. Technology keeps moving forward, new forms of expression are popping up, and that debate around fair use,
It's
definitely going to keep going.
You got it. And that's why it's so important to stay engaged, to keep learning, and to keep asking those tough questions about where art, law, and everything in between intersect.
Absolutely. So to all of you listening out there, keep creating, keep pushing those creative boundaries, and most importantly, keep those legal minds sharp. We'll catch you on the next episode of The Deep Dive, where we'll explore another fascinating corner of the legal world. Until then, keep on diving deep.